ensure that when a state employee talks to a legislator, they're talking to us in our official capacity. We're not using that for partisan purpose or private purpose. But frankly, if you look in Mason's manual defines our responsibility rather broadly. We have the ability and the responsibility to know about all phases of state government. We're the board of directors of this corporation. And we have to know, we have to be well informed, and we have to know the facts about how this corporation is running to make good decisions. If we depend only upon the CEO or his top assistants to tell us how the corporation is running, we may not have the correct picture. Now, I think we have an excellent CEO, and I think we have excellent top assistants to the CEO, but sometimes we don't get the full picture unless you go out in the shop, on the shop floor, and talk to the people doing the work. And that's what this does. This says, all it says is that the governor and the executive department and any agency head in the state or other public agency cannot prohibit, may not prohibit people talking to legislators in response to an official request about what's going on, if it's not required to be confidential by state or federal law. If it's required to be confidential by state or federal law, we don't get to hear about it. See, so a children's services case is required to be confidential, names, things like that.
Yes, but Mr. Chairman.
But we're not supposed to know that, and this wouldn't let us know about those things required to be confidential. The things that aren't required, we could talk to state employees about.
Representative Woody.
Well, Senator, specific cases in Children's Services Division, but the recently publicized over $500,000 expenditure that's been in the paper would have certainly been able. I wonder how that got out. It certainly didn't get out by an audit. And I don't think it came out through the CEO.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
Talking about the booze, et cetera, is what I'm talking about.
Oh, AFS. You're talking AFS, about AFS. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah,
okay.
Really, I said the wrong thing.
Okay. AFS, there's allegations of leather portfolios worth $100 for AFS ponchos.
How do you imagine that got out?
That got out by the employees. That got out from
That's
the employees.
That's all I'm going to say, Mr. Chairman.
And the same thing with Employment Division. The employees complained about misspent funds, about poor management, and in fact, we have new leadership in the Employment Division. We should be real clear about that. We have an excellent person leading the Employment Division now on an interim basis, Libby Leonard. She's outstanding. She's filling in because the last director left, in part because of the problems that the division encountered and the lack of morale of the employees. It's the employees who identified a lot of the problems in the Employment Division and the employees who identified a lot of the problems in AFS. As a result of those problems being identified, we have the audit, which exposes them objectively and points the way to improve management. But the employees don't have complete protection. So you get the kind of situation like the U of O physical plant, you get anonymous complaints. People are afraid, they're scared. And they do suffer retribution. They do suffer retaliation from their supervisors. If they have reasonable grounds, they're not being malicious. We're not going to protect malicious things. If they have reasonable grounds to think something wrong is going on, they should not fear retaliation for exposing that. They shouldn't fear that kind of retaliation. And if retaliation occurs, they should have a remedy. They should be made whole.
Mr. Chair. Representative Edmonds.
I think that's important to have that on the record. The Section 4 does not prohibit the supervisor from requiring the employee to inform of the supervisor that there has been an official legislative request has been to be made. In other words, if the supervisor can go to employee and say, Senator Hill asked for anything, I want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the employer, as I understand this bill, the employer could then assert a confidentiality and would have to then establish under what section of the law or rule or whatever it is that somehow this information is confidential and may not be disclosed. Would that be the scenario?
It would depend. If you called an individual over at AFS in a field office and said, I understand there's funny business going on, can you tell me about it? And they say, I'm afraid to talk to you because I'm going to get into trouble and get fired. My supervisor said, don't get caught talking to people. You could say, with this law, you're protected if you have, if you're in response to an official request and you're not breaking confidentiality requirements.
Okay.
Now, some agencies have clearer confidentiality requirements than other agencies or other statutes, and that's one problem we need to resolve, perhaps through rulemaking, clarify that.
I want to just pursue that, Senator, because a supervisor could have a policy that when any official legislative request is made of an employee, that employee shall first determine if the information sought is confidential. And that determination could take a month or so.
No, I don't think.
And under the open records law, for reporters, there's a very short window that the agency has to act affirmatively and say it's either covered, it's protected, or it's not protected. And if it isn't protected, it's fair game.
Mm-hmm.
And I envision the same sort of dynamic here, but I want to know.
It doesn't require prior approval for release of information, so let me clarify that.
It says, or to be made, on line 26. Nothing prohibits a supervisor from requiring an employee inform the agency of a request for information or the substance of testimony to be made.
And that's testimony. That would be like official testimony.
Well, I don't want to get in an argument here, but I just want to make sure that we're not talking about that we're allowed to ask, but they're not allowed to answer.
No, they are allowed to answer without prior approval, but the employee answering must not reveal confidential information. See, so the employee is going to have to make a judgment. The person at the other end of the line in the field office will have to ask themselves, is this required to be confidential by law or rule?
So
because
prior clearance,
I'm not protected if I reveal confidential information, but I am protected prior to notifying my supervisor if I discuss generally the state of things in the office, the morale of the employees, and whether we've got problems in the office in a general way.
Prior clearance under this bill is limited to written testimony to be given in an official...
Yes, it's testimony. Yes.
Thank you.
Testimony before a committee such as this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Wasn't the situation with you, Karen, exactly what we just discussed, that it was considered a confidential information that gave that information to someone else? Wasn't that the basis for their decision?
I didn't know who the person was, and I did not give a name, I did not give an address, I did not give a description. All I said was, the person you're looking for is here.
But that was the basis the Employment Division used, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman?
On the one point, Representative Johnson, the section that speaks to revealing the possible wanted felon is the only section of the law that says notwithstanding confidentiality requirements. So, and what that would allow is disclosure of the name and address of that person only to the state police. So only to that extent does this law supersede confidentiality requirements. And it addresses the concern some agencies have. Each agency has different confidentiality laws. That's part of the problem. Someday we ought to overhaul them all. But AFS does not have a law that specifically limits release of client data. Employment Division says it has a law that says the director has control over release of client name and address. The case in Karen Holsey's firing was that the director refused to release that information to the police, even though he had the authority to under existing confidentiality statutes. Actually, it was the director of field services that made that direct refusal.
Representative Mannix?
I think we should clarify a couple of points. I think that the thrust of the bill is very good. We need to be aware of the executive branch's concern because it could always culminate in a veto if we go so far as to cause the executive branch to think that they're being impinged on, and I think that there's some way of clarifying some of this. The biggest concern Mr. Miller seems to have had is the section that is now section 3A. And actually, taking a look at the statutory scheme and reality, I don't know why, and this I haven't been convinced that we have to have a new law that requires people to respond to legislative inquiries when they're in a government agency. The reason I say that, as opposed to being able to come forward without fear of discrimination or retribution if they do report misdoings at any point, The reason why I say that is I look at the statutes, and if you appear as a witness, you are immune from criminal or civil action for whatever you say as a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are also privileged as to anything you have done as a witness in terms of any other kind of action.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of political realities, I can't imagine any instrumentality of the state or any person working for the state who would refuse to respond to a legislative inquiry. And if they did, then you've got the subpoena power. And so far, of course, I've only been a legislator 4.5 months, but if anything, agencies are begging to provide me with every scrap of information that I want, much more than I want sometimes. What I'm getting at, if that provision really bothers the executive branch, and I don't see a crying need for it, I see so much more here that's so very important, I would hate to tiptoe into veto land. Just in order to keep that provision in the bill.
We're going to have a representative of the executive branch up next.
Okay. Well, I wanted to give Senator Hill a chance to respond.
I think the observations are keen ones. I'd simply point out that much information I've received over my 7 years in the legislature didn't come from testimony or as a result of subpoenaed testimony, but rather from informal communication with employees of the state. As you gain experience and settle into your position, you'll develop contacts with a broad variety of employees in many state agencies, valuable contacts that help you understand how the state operates and allows you to learn what's going on in the field to supplement the company line. And I use the company line just to describe the fact that when the executive department and other agencies speak, they're speaking for the governor, and they're representing a consistent viewpoint, a consistent management viewpoint. It's a good idea to get a variety of information to base your decisions upon. In the employment division, under the previous administrator, employees were told not to communicate to legislators, not to communicate with legislators because they'd get into trouble if they did.
Senator Hill, committee counsel was out of the room when you made a request for a change.
Oh, yes.
Could you restate that for Max?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 3, line 40, delete the words subsection 2 of, because our intent was to make violation of all parts of section 3 subject to unlawful employment practice procedures, and we inadvertently limited it to only part of section 3.
Okay.
If the governor has not, finalize my comment, the governor has not indicated he will veto this bill. Mr. Miller has indicated he'd like some amendments to the bill, but as of yet, I have no indication the governor intends to veto the bill.
Representative Durfler.
Yeah, I was going to suggest it probably is going to increase our workload because I get one or two calls a week from agencies, and a lot of them, of course, won't give us their names, but if they're allowed to do this and not and have immunity, I think we probably will be getting more information.
Mr. Chairman, one last point. The protection is in response to an official request, so it doesn't allow a flood of information to come in. The protection is triggered when you make a request for information and they respond.
Thank you.
Is that sort of like going in and saying, now I want you to ask me to ask?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Whitty.
Just a question on how this is all going to work. I assume state employees live in this area. Most of them do. Some of them, you know, their state offices all over the place, but most of them are here. And so then I suppose that if there's going to be any kind of a whistle blown, that the Salem people, Representative Mannix and Representative Durfler, are going to get most of the phone calls. Because I don't get those kind of phone calls.
Yeah.
But he does, or at least you said you did.
Mr. Chairman?
I just wonder about that.
The ruckus that Adult and Family Services has been under, the ill-advised spending and mismanagement that was alleged in Adult and Family Services was east of the Cascades. It was in the eastern region. And the employees who worked in that region were the ones who saw what was going on and raised complaints. Not all the complaints were valid, but many of them were. They deserved investigation, and they were finally investigated. But those were that was the eastern side. So I think it just depends on, you know, Springfield isn't a hotbed of state employment, yet that's where Ms. Holsey experienced her problem and financial loss. So it could happen in North Bend. It could happen in Portland.
Thank you all very
Thank
much.
Thank you. Appreciate your courtesy.
If anybody's here on Senate Bill 518, we will not be getting to that bill this morning. We've got floor session at 10:30. We've got a couple more people signed up to testify, so I want to give you that word now. This will be the last bill this morning, yes. Dave Fiscom?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dave Fiscom, Assistant to the Director of the Executive Department, appearing here today to, if not oppose House Bill 1051, at least question a particular and maybe a couple of particular sections of the bill. I believe your staff has distributed a copy of a letter to your chairman from Mr. Miller, the Director of the Department, which contains with it a copy of a letter that Mr. Miller also sent to the bill's chief sponsor, Senator Hill. To the extent that this bill revolves around the subject of whistleblowing, it probably will, in fact, be compelling. No doubt that is, in some major way, why it passed the Senate. And so the risk in sitting before you today is that I could, by my suggestion of opposition to the bill, seem to argue against whistleblowing. But let me hasten to add that the Executive Department and Executive Branch, too, supports protection for persons who report wrongdoing in state agencies or on the part of agency officials. And in fact, we believe that current statutes afford or provide this protection. ORS 240.316, for example, directs the Personnel and Labor Relations Division of the Executive Department to promulgate procedures to protect employees from reprisals because they make disclosures of this kind. ORS 240.740 protects the identity of any employee who discloses information that they reasonably believe shows a violation of law or rule, a gross waste of funds, abuse of authority, or danger to public health and safety. And I have not read you the entire statutes, just cited sections of both of those statutes. However, as we read it, Section 3 of House Bill 1051 goes beyond reporting alleged wrongdoing to relate to or impinge upon the overall relationship between the executive and legislative branches of government. Under the language in this section, an individual legislator could compel commentary from executive branch employees on policy matters still under discussion, including very sensitive matters on which someone like a governor or an executive department director has not yet made a decision and has not yet then followed through with regard to reporting that decision to the legislature. We have no difficulty, I should hasten to add, as well with legislative oversight. That, of course, is entirely appropriate, and we have every intention of continuing to cooperate in such review processes in the future as we have in the past, including some new proposals for legislative oversight under consideration by this session of the legislature. Concern relates in particular to line 25 on page 1 and lines 1 to 5 on page 2. We believe those are not necessary. Section 4 also becomes an issue prompting agencies, and I forget which lines these are, but prompting agencies to write administrative rules to govern when employees can talk to the legislature threatens to bind the process up in red tape and confusion. What now, at least in my experience, works very well, many employees talking to many legislators will be made subject to what would be for agencies a bulky rulemaking process. To us, two things are important. We want to continue protecting those who report alleged wrongdoing, and we want to make sure that the proper, open, and effective working relationship between members of the legislature and the executive branch is allowed to continue, if not to prosper. Finally, I want to make just two other quick points for the record before I close. One is that while I think I understand why this section is there, we do have a question about Section 7 of the bill, which appears to set up a new jurisdiction in this area for review and oversight by the Bureau of Labor and Industries. There already are many agencies involved in dealing with and protecting whistleblowers, or at least hearing concerns expressed by whistleblowers. Our own department, for example, is on the receiving end of many such attempts to blow whistle on wrongdoing. The Attorney General, I know, receives such comments from individuals, Secretary of State's office, the Governor's office, and especially the Citizens Representative office in the Governor's office, and of course your own offices as legislators. Secondly, we have no difficulty with the approach.
Excuse me, let's stop right there. Representative Mannix?
What section pulls in the Bureau of Labor other than Section 8?
Maybe I cited the wrong section, Representative Mannix.
Section 7, okay. Thank you.
The last thing I will say is that we have no difficulty with the approach suggested in this bill to solve issues arising from the Springfield Employment Division case. Just as we have no difficulty with another piece of legislation that bears on the issue, House Bill 2298, which I believe has passed your committee and the House as well and is in the Senate. So our concern does not relate to the section of this bill before you which deals with that subject. And in fact, we believe the issue needs to be resolved by the legislature in either of those two ways, and we would be amenable to other ways someone would suggest. So that issue, as presented by this bill, does not trouble us. I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop and see if you have any questions.
Sure.
Representative Edmondson.
Thank you. Mr. Fiscom, I recall that you were one time a member of the press in the state. That's correct, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edmondson, yes, you're exactly right.
I recall I worked at the same newspaper.
We probably sat in the same chair at different times.
I think so.
Yes, sir.
Just wonder if you'd have any objection if we were to expand this law to include members of the press making inquiries of global government.
I'm Mr. Chairman, Representative Edmondson. I, of course, am not in favor of any abridgment of freedom of the press.
A more serious question. Actually, for the representative of the newspaper publishers, that was a very serious question. But I do want to ask you about, on page 2, lines 17 and 18, it says that nothing in the Act requires an employee to give prior notice of making any disclosure. I'd like you to comment on the same question I asked Senator Hill about line 26, that nothing prohibits a supervisor from requiring the employee inform of the substance of testimony to be made. Now, prior restraint in the generic sense is a big issue in disclosure of information. And as a former reporter, I know you are sensitive to how that works. What's your opinion of the relationship between line 17, basically, on prior notice prior to making any disclosure, and the line 26 on the supervisor's authority to ask in advance of the substance of testimony to be made? Those inconsistent, I guess, is what I think.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edmondson, I'm not sure that I understand exactly your question. This section, while I understand the intent of portions of it, the issue of binding up in rules and regulations and laws in something which I believe from my own personal experience, and others may cite theirs different than mine, now works well in practice, interaction between legislators and executive branch employees. I'm not answering your question on points. I don't understand it for sure, yeah. But I wouldn't be in favor of either of those approaches.
Okay. Oh, I appreciate that. Appreciate your opinion. I asked Senator Hill about prior rules that allowed us to ask but did not allow employees to answer. Now, that's with prior restraint. Mr. Fiscom, I said as governor, do not talk to the reporter when he asks, or the legislator when he asks. It says up here on line 17 that nothing in the Act requires any employee to give notice prior to making any disclosure or engaging in discussion. That seems to allow the employee to answer.
Without gaining the prior approval to answer.
Without gaining prior approval. In fact, it says give notice prior. On Then it says down on line 24, the act is not intended to prohibit a supervisor from requiring an employee inform the supervisor of the substance of testimony to be made. That sounds like prior restraint. Do you see that as a conflict with the earlier line, or can you reconcile it as simply to require prior approval of written testimony? That was Senator Hill's response. I just wanted you to comment on that same point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edmondson, I guess for purposes of the bill as it now stands, at first blush, those two sections, those two lines, do appear to be in conflict. I understand the distinction Senator Hill has made. It's fairly typical for agencies to approve in some way up the chain of command in a particular agency the content of testimony that's to be made in response to official requests in writing. To the extent that's prior restraint, I suppose that's prior management review of a position. But at first blush, those two sentences do appear to be in conflict. One of the problems I have is that Senator Hill may understand those sentences far better than I, having been instrumental in drafting them. So I don't mean to try to second-guess the purpose of those lines.
Further questions? I've got one question, Dave. This is going back to the rulemaking at the bottom of page 2. Some agencies I'm aware of do have rules. Apparently others do not. What's the current status in the executive branch of current rules, maybe not even as formal as rules, but policies, if you will, of the various agencies? Are they all over the place? Or,
Mr. Chairman, sure. We have not made any kind of a complete study of that agency by agency. In my own experience of having worked for five or six agencies, I have never seen an administrative rule. Doesn't mean there wasn't one. I have never seen one that pertained to the issue and attempted to circumscribe when an employee could appear before the legislature. In my experience, whenever a request was made, we always met it, in the sense of the agencies where I've worked. If somebody was requested to testify, the person testified, and that included, for example, caseworkers in CSD who were asked to appear before the Ways and Means Committee to discuss the implications of a governor's recommended budget. We, of course, complied with that request, and the employees in those situations with which I'm familiar were encouraged to be candid and open and responsive to the legislature. But to answer your question on point, I have not looked at all of that. There may be, to quote your comment, more informal policies, in other words, less official than administrative rules that bear on the subject and try to set standards for contact with the legislature. But I have not seen one which says, to put it too bluntly, you as employees may not speak with the legislature.
Well, I know that
I understand
exists, but there are certain rules. Any other questions of Mr. Fiskum? Representative Mannix?
This might be addressed to you, Mr. Fiskum, or to somebody else out there, but I wonder why we have Section 7 in here. It seems to me by the other protections we've put in about no one being able to take action against an individual, this says you can't identify who disclosed the information, and I'm not sure why we're doing that when it seems to me one of the best protections generally is to, one, know who disclosed information so you'll know how good the source is. And maybe you can't address that question.
Mr. Chairman, I'm probably not the best person to address that, having not been the one who drafted the bill. I understand your point with regard to the questioning why it's there. Perhaps it'd be appropriate for me to yield to Senator Hill on that.
Well, if someone discloses information to me, and I don't want to tell anybody who did it, I can just say, I claim legislative immunity, and I'm not going to tell you. So as far as legislators getting information, we don't need that. Now, if they disclose it to the press, I want to know how good is this information. The source is an important factor in determining whether or not information is accurate. So I haven't heard any compelling information to tell me why we have to have anonymous informants being quoted. Anyway, thank you.
Tell you what I want to do with this. I'm going to have Representative Mannix and Representative Gerfler work with the executive department and the chief sponsor and any union representatives on this issue. I think there's a couple questions that are troublesome, And we certainly would, it's my intent anyway, that this bill gets signed into law, and I don't want to have any questions of a possible veto, whether or not it's been said or not. I don't want that to happen. I think this is a good bill, good concept, and I'd like all the parties to work out these problems if we can. Okay?
We'll be pleased to participate in such a review, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We have to get to the floor where both parties are caucusing, and with that, we are adjourned.